Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And it's Thursday, so it means I get to hang out with cool people. And as I look around, yep, that's what I see. Cool people. So let's just start meeting who's here today. Tom, you're back. How are you?
I'm back. Thanks, Jeff. I'm great. I'm sorry I missed the show last week. Had a paying gig.
I
you
can
know how that
appreciate
goes.
that. Yep.
And I'm very happy for about 11 consecutive days. We haven't had any power outages, so I'm happy about that. We've had a ton of storms, wind storms, tree branches falling all over. It's a crazy mess here in the valley. But it's cloudy, but no rain today, so I'm happy about that. It's nice to have power. But
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I do have one bone to pick, though. Can you indulge me for 1 second?
I am here to indulge you.
Okay. So as you know, I was born in Mountain View. I grew up in what is now called Silicon Valley. And ever since, and this has bugged me for a long time, but ever since the SVB collapse, every time I hear on the news somebody say Silicon Valley, Silicon Valley Bank, Silicon Valley, blah, 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 I get a little twitch. You know, it's not Silicon, it's Silicon. Silicon Valley. It's like a U, it's not an O. So I just needed to get that off my chest.
Lightning
Please say
clap.
Silicon Valley. If you want to sound cool, say Silicon Valley, not Silicon Valley. And certainly not Silicon. Definitely not Silicon Valley, right?
Silicon's
and
been
yeah, yeah,
completed,
definitely not
though.
Silicon Valley.
You know,
That's LA.
That's LA. Yeah,
yeah.
That's the response to anybody who would say Silicon Valley would say, no, that's LA. So anyway, I needed to get that off my chest. Thanks for indulging me.
I can appreciate that. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Yes, that's
Silicon
exactly what it
Valley
is.
Valley Bank.
That's exactly what it was like. I just get such a bad adverse reaction to hearing that.
Yeah,
it's like Brits when we hear Americans talk about a network device called a router. And that's how you say it. A router is a different. That's a tool for cutting holes in wood, making channels in wood. Not a router. A router,
well, I mean,
the machine you make troughs in wood. A router is a network device for connecting networks together.
Well, here, router is the guys who fix your toilet.
Thank you, Ben.
Really? All right.
if you want your sewer pipe cleaned out, you call a router.
He puts his pipes down and
yep.
does the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right. Ian, I will point out that we do not butcher one of the elements from the periodic table of elements. We say aluminum.
Which is wrong. It's aluminium.
It's not aluminium. I'm sorry.
It's aluminium. That's exactly what it is.
We also say math correctly. It is not
no,
a plural.
Yeah,
no,
it's
no,
not
no,
plural.
No.
Yeah.
Maths. It's like these really really good Danish plastic toys that you build with. When you have more
you
than
mean
one,
Lego
they're
bricks?
Still. Yeah, but when you have those and you have lots of them, they're still called Lego. They're not Legos.
I am
There's
with
no
you
plural.
On that.
There is
yes.
no plural to Legos. It's just Lego. You've
there's
got a box
there's
of Lego.
One
you haven't got a box
company
of Legos.
Called Lego.
Here's what I want to know. How they can say maths plural, but sport singular.
That's a good question. I never thought of that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're right.
That's a
big
really
difference.
Good question. Mm. You know, maybe there's only so many plurals to go around, and they had to have a committee meeting, and there were a bunch of people in Parliament, and that when they said, so should we pluralize math or sport? And someone said, well, I say sport. And everyone else went, rumph, 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 rumph. And then it was settled. It is maths.
Yes, maths is correct.
Hey, to be fair to the Americans on this panel, we should acknowledge that the Brits invented the language. So maybe they're right.
Well, to be fair, no,
right.
Everyone that invaded them invented the language.
That's true.
If you,
though,
there's a...
though,
go ahead, Ben.
Since our dialect is from the 18th century, American English is technically older.
Yeah,
it is. It's fascinating. There's All jokes aside, there's a superb book by Bill Bryson,
right,
called The Mother Tongue.
That's a great book.
Where he looks at how English and English and American, if you like, have branched, and mm-hmm. how these different bits all still intermingle, and how English became English from Norse and Saxon and all kinds of other things, and we went all fancy in the 1800s. That's why any sort of things like Santa and stuff is RE over here, because we wanted to be like the French. You wanted it over there. I'll tell you one thing I did learn recently that I thought was fun. Have you ever wondered where uppercase and lowercase comes from when we talk about letters?
I know this because this is my background.
Okay, yeah.
But I will cede the floor to the rest of the panel, just in case someone else knows, because I don't want to take the glory away from either of you if you know uppercase, lowercase.
I don't know.
I know where numerals come from.
Okay, that's actually better than most people. So yeah. Well done.
Arabic numerals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the exactly. So uppercase, lowercase, this comes from printing press. And so that's you had exactly your letters cast in lead. And you had the different sizes. So you had the capital letters, and that was in your upper case, which was like a big wooden grid.
Which is a box by the printing machine.
And then the lower case letters were in the tray below.
Yeah, the smaller italics were all sat in the bottom tray.
So maybe my shift, should the shift key be on top of the keyboard instead of the bottom?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. We doing a tech show or what?
we're totally winging it. Serious technology here. I mean,
this is interesting nonsense. I usually throw one of these kind of interesting bits of nonsense in when I'm teaching my classes, because it just breaks up an otherwise conversation of, did you know about this?
Yes, I forgot to say, welcome to the Print Shop Show.
Yeah.
I think this week in
Gutenberg.
I think, to be fair, you were on step one of introductions, Jeff. Sorry for derailing.
Yeah,
with my Silicon Valley rant.
Right. Yeah. You're right.
When have we ever been on the rails?
Yeah, never.
Never.
Right, and certainly not today. Ben, how are you?
I am great. I just want to say I am missing the holiest of all days to be here.
You know, I appreciate the sacrifice you're making for us, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad that at least you can dress for the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
I do have to say I also have to deal with the devil's invention called the blackout.
Oh, yeah. I've been on a couple other shows where people lament, rant, wail and gnash teeth about the blackout, which to me is the most ridiculous, stupid thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially when I live in a state, in an area where I not have one major league blackout, I have six.
So Ian, also,
there's no news
about...
until after the games then. So there's no reporting until after the games. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
I presume this is to stop gambling, is it?
Oh, it has nothing to do with
gambling. It has to do with
TV rights.
Yeah, TV
rights. Oh, right, yeah. It's just as competitive then, in a way. It's almost as bad as gambling.
Yep. So on any given week or any given day, I can, there's going to be up to 15 games in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Conceivably, I would not be able to watch up to six of them.
That's so stupid.
It is, isn't it?
It's really stupid.
Yeah. Just absolutely stupid. But Ben, you look great.
Of course I do. Thank you, Jeff.
And of course you do. You know, Ben, one of the things that I think is awesome about you is that you are willing to accept that you are awesome.
Yes,
a lot of people would say, oh, no, but no, you embrace it. And that, sir, is awesome.
You know, when's the last time you ever heard of a German being modest?
Well, there, no.
That's true. And we complain a lot as well.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Standard.
All right. So, Ian, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. I'm great. I've been a busy week of sorting out material for we're doing a big event in Miami. I've not managed to blag my way out to get out there, but we're doing myself and my colleague are going to create a video and presentation and stuff to go out to be broadcast as part of the event and stuff. And so we've been getting our slides together and making sure all the slides are in the right color and the right font. And all of those painful things you have to do when you're trying to do things for marketing people. So I've been doing that this week. And then today I've been playing around with some more of our industry certifications. I've got a few more that I haven't done. And I want to be a certified trainer in our product and I need to have these ones. So I've just been blatting through them today. So I've collected a whole load of new swimming badges, as I like to call them. So yeah.
Nice.
Technical professional. I'm a Veeam certified sales professional as well. So it's all those kind of rubbish. It's marketing based.
So you're saying you're certified?
I've been certified for years, mate. I've been certified for years.
Yeah.
They let me out every week so I can come sit here. Otherwise, basically, I'm locked in my little room and pointed at a computer to do things. And then they put me away again afterwards. I'm not allowed out. They're normal people very often.
And there we have our show title.
Yeah, I'm laughing, but you know, you may actually be right. Yeah. All right. So, Tom, you have the whole blackout thing that you have to deal with, different from Ben's blackout, because we live in the United States, which has a completely antiquated power grid. So
yes.
I'm glad you do have power. And this is something I think you and I can bond over because you live in California and I live in Colorado. We are having our first red flag warning for wildfires.
Oh, geez. For the season. It's not even April yet.
It's not even April. We've had record snowfall. And
you got a red flag warning.
And
today.
We have a red flag warning. Yeah.
Holy cow. That's incredible. That's actually nice. That's what I'm worried about here, that the rains are going to stop. And from all the rains over the winter, with all the growth, we're going to have another bad wildfire season.
Oh, yeah. I forget about that you're going to get the cycle that if you feed the grass, you get lovely, nice, tall, fresh grass.
Right.
And you've got sun, and then it dries out in the sun. And then, fantastic, you've got beautiful kindling.
Right, yes. Exactly.
I'm guessing is really the way it goes, isn't it? Yeah.
That's exactly how it goes. And then a little later, the locusts come.
Ah.
Right. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. Well, and Ben, I do like what you dropped in the chat, which is that after the show, we will start in on our third type of blackout, which may or may not have implications for your kidneys and liver.
Yes.
And the enjoyment of adult beverages.
Yes. All right. Well, you know, I'm feeling like since it's the big show, at some point we should at least make it look like we're kind of doing the big show. So does anyone have a story?
And yeah, I'm just
there you are.
I mean, I know it's four friends together talking, but yeah, here's a story and it's kind of a sad one. It's an icon of our industry has passed away last week. Gordon Moore, if you've heard of Moore's Law, he was the guy who came up with that idea that every time we increase the power of every year, the number of circuits would double every year, isn't it? It's double every 2 years. Over the next decade, the idea that we're going to continue to make denser and denser ICs, and which are basically computer chips that go inside our PCs and things like that. And frankly, it's surprising. I mean, it was 94, so the poor chap is gone, but he was so prescient and so right in what he was doing. I mean, we're lucky enough that we got Tom with us. Tom worked in the, I'll give you a nice intro, Tom, because Tom worked in the semiconductor industry. So we've got someone who actually knows a bit more about it than I do, which is what I read from the internet, basically, and the buttons I press on my computer that make it happen.
Yeah, Gordon Moore is definitely on the Mount Rushmore of the semiconductor industry. You know, he was part of Schottky Semiconductor and then left Schottky to form as part of the Traders 8 to form Fairchild. And he was at Fairchild when he submitted that article about the transistors doubling every 2 years. And, you know, he didn't call it Moore's Law. He just wrote an article in a paper. Yeah. And it was somebody in the early 70s that coined that term, another famous guy that called it Moore's Law. And after he got the Intel, he actually amended it to be every 18 months. So it was originally doubling transistors on the same area over 2 years, and then he amended it to 18 months. And it held up for about 50 years until, you know, the early 2010s, it was going at that rate. And the kind of exponential growth that he was talking about has sort of ended now. I think in the last few years, you know, depending on who you ask, 4 or 5 years, it's ended. Stuff is getting better, but not for the reason that Moore made that prediction.
Am I correct in my assumption that one of the reasons why we're not seeing the same exponential growth now is because we're hitting walls with the laws of physics?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's basically it. And people talked about it even in my younger days in the 80s. People were talking about when this was going to end, and they basically identified the point, you know, where it did end. They didn't know exactly when that point would come from a technology development point of view, but they knew that once you got down to 14 nanometer and, you know, below 10 nanometer, that's basically when it was going to stop. And the end game is really five nanometers, probably the last node that you can say followed Moore's Law in any way. And, you know, that's 5 nanometers is at least 5 or 6 years old in terms of development. But it's just amazing. You know, my LinkedIn profile, the picture in the background is a picture of the Traders 8. And I did actually, the one time I met Gordon Moore was at a semiconductor industry event. It was one of those once a year, you know, rubber chicken in a hotel room events or in a hotel conference room event. And it was, I can't remember, it was the 40th or 50th anniversary of the SIA. And so they had all these luminaries come, which was really exciting. And Gordon Moore was there. And I wanted to shake his hand and get him to sign the book. They gave out a book at this event.
Oh.
And so there was this long line of people to get Gordon Moore to sign. He was the star of the show, the most famous guy there. And there was a long line to get his signature. And he was, you know, in his 80s, or late 70s, early 80s by that time. And by the time I got up to him, just the person in front of me, he turned to his wife, Betty, who was sitting next to him. He said, "I can't sign anymore. My hand is hurting like hell. I can't sign anymore." And he told us all he was sorry, but he couldn't sign anymore. So I shook his hand, but I didn't get his autograph. And in lieu of his autograph, I got some others like Jerry Sanders and some other people. But I did get his wife's signature. Betty signed it for me.
That's still nice.
So I have Betty Moore's signature instead of Gordon Moore. But and he was just the nicest. You know, you always heard about how humble and friendly he was. You know, he was, I'm sure, in business, probably a little bit tough as a manager and so on. But as a person, he was extremely nice. And his post-retirement actions are a good indication of what a generous person he was. Betty and Gordon Moore Foundation has given away lots of money to really good causes.
Mm-hmm.
I think something like $3-4 billion, isn't it? It's
yeah,
it's some big, big, big number. And I'm sort of taken aback by how he does everything. I read about him says really nice guy, just wanted to get the ideas out there and get and do things and make the industry what it was. And that's got to be good. I mean, he said about the tripping back briefly to the Moore's Law, there was a quote in the Reg article that I posted in here. Was he was saying all I was trying to do was get the message across. They're putting more and more stuff on a chip. We're going to make electronics cheaper.
Right. It was all about cost. It was just, about cost.
Yeah. And so it's sort of nicely sort of like clear and good. And that, again, that vision, that sort of seeing the way forward, seeing what was going to come. Excellent. Really good. And yeah, another one, which is, I think, something we're going to start to see more of, isn't it? Are those, all of the pioneers are all now starting to get toward that point where we'll start to lose and we're left with the idiots instead.
Yep, and not from terrible diseases, just from the natural flow of time.
Natural world of old age, and there's the world we live in now where our life expectancy is 80s and 90s is perfectly reasonable. Mm-hmm. No longer, if you get to 40, you've done well, you know.
Right.
I mean, going back years and years ago, getting to 40, you'd have done well, you know, it's...
And I think the other thing that people that kind of made Gordon more a hero of a lot of people here is he grew up here. He grew up near a place called Half Moon Bay, which is along the
Pacific. Half Moon Bay.
Yeah, actually in a town called Pescadero, which is right near Half Moon Bay. And it's I think his family goes back to the mid-19th century that they had ranch land in Half Moon Bay. It's an area where, if you're familiar with Jack London, he spends a lot of time talking about. So he grew up in Pescadero. He went to San Jose State, you know, so he's a true local guy.
Mm.
That's really cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad that he's gone at the same time. Wow, he was around for a long time.
He was.
And saw a lot of change in his life as well.
He did.
Let's face it. I mean, he saw, and he was one of the ones driving it.
Absolutely. I mean, we always talk about the fact that the name of the valley changed from the Valley of Your Heart's Delight to Silicon Valley. He was probably one of three or four people who were the impetus behind that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, not everybody lives to see their legacy fully enacted. Gordon Moore did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
That's a really good observation, Ben. Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, his primary partner, Robert Noyce, didn't, right? He died, I think, in the 80s, as I remember. You know, those are really the two key guys, Noyce and Moore, who built Intel and all that. And Noyce died a long time ago.
Yeah. So he went from vacuum tubes and punch cards to 5 nanometers. And people freaking out about artificial intelligence.
Right. That's crazy.
And having a computer more powerful than the vacuum tube and things in his pocket.
Yeah. Well, he worked for the...
Or on your wrist.
Or on his wrist, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he worked with the guy who invented, or at least gets credit for inventing the transistor, Schottky. I mean, he goes back to the very, very, very beginnings of the whole industry.
That's really cool. And Ben, you're right. He lived long enough to see his legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Tom, you have a story.
I do. I kind of have a single story with a few links. So the first link I posted is the Gartner hype cycle. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's one of my favorite things when new stuff comes out. It's the curve that goes kind of almost straight up when something new and fantastical comes out and everybody's talking it up. And then there's a peak of that hype, and then the hype will start dropping and people will find the problems with it, and there'll be a backlash. And if the product is successful, it'll settle down into something that's still hype, but nowhere near the peak. And the reason I posted that is because of AI. In the last week or two, I've heard everywhere I go, I hear AI this, AI that. Every podcast, every magazine article, on the television news, on the radio, you have so-called normies. Everybody's talking about AI. And so I want to talk about the hype of AI and what it's like to be in the middle of this rising hype situation with AI. And what it may or may not turn out to be. So you guys are probably familiar with GTC, where NVIDIA was a big star of GTC, and NVIDIA is all about AI now. And remember, NVIDIA started as a graphics chip company. You know, there are a bunch of guys from SGI and Sun that took all that graphics technology to make standalone chips for the masses. And they've completely 100% pivoted to AI, which is probably a smart business move because they really are a key part of the infrastructure to support AI. And it's a very competitive place too. You know, there are a lot of people trying to create AI-specific processors to compete with them, the whole world, it seems like. So Jensen Huang got up and talked about AI uses for pharmaceuticals, partnering with Microsoft and Azure so you can run all your applications and training models on the cloud with NVIDIA processors, the automobile industry, even in the industry I came from, semiconductor, where AI and GPUs can be used to accelerate the manufacturing process for semiconductors. That was something I was involved in when I was still working. And it's just everywhere. And, you know, the terms that he used, my favorite one was the iPhone moment of AI. It's like, that is... I couldn't
believe
it.
Did he talk
about
a paradigm? Did he mention the word paradigm? I always, then I'm already starting to
That's
my
a good
brain
one.
Off.
That's paradigm, a good one. Paradigm shift.
Paradigm shift, disrupting the industry. Any of those words are used in any press release, and I'm going, it's bollocks.
Right. and then a company I talked about a while ago, Cerebras, which is they're a chip design company, but they implemented a CPU for the full wafer instead of, you know, designing a chip that's put on a wafer and the chip wafer is cut up and each die is a Apple processor or whatever. Their processor is the whole wafer. I think I talked about that last year. They jumped on the AI train because they are AI focused processor now. That's how they pivoted over the last year. And they claim to be among the first large language models to be trained without relying on GPUs, a direct shot at NVIDIA. This is part of the competition. And they've shared, I think, seven LLMs models, and they're also sharing the weights and the training recipe for that, which, you know, they're a startup, they have nothing to lose. So putting stuff out there in sort of an open source way, I think it's under an Apache 2.0 license is what they said, was kind of interesting. But it just gives you an indication of the of the competition going on there. Then a company I'm familiar with announced that their complete design, it's a company that provides design tools for semiconductor design, that their whole entire design suite is now AI driven. They had their annual user conference meeting this week, and that was the big announcement. Every tool is AI driven. Every single tool is AI driven, or the platform is AI driven, which is, you know, I won't say too much, but it's a bit of a hype.
I'm going to go with it's too much of a hype.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the last article I posted a link to is related to Google. So Google wrote a paper that they put in the magazine Nature, which is kind of a weird place for Google to put a paper in, about using AI-driven semiconductor design. And there's been internally in the Valley here a lot of controversy about their findings in the paper. And in the article from the Register, you can see there are a lot of people disputing their claims and so on, which I think is a very typical thing about during the technology hype cycle, as people are making some wild claims. There are people throwing darts at them, and the competition is just fierce. So I'm sorry for posting so many links, but I guess my point is I can't believe how fast the hype cycle of AI is taken off. It's just incredible.
When will it plateau, do you think? When will it go over the top of the bell curve and drop down the other side and people go, no, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. It's got some niche use cases and the rest of it, no, we don't need it.
That's a really good question. I have no idea. That's an excellent question.
I think we're still on the climb with AI hype cycle.
Yeah, I agree.
And Tom, I just threw a link in that ties in to your whole story, and it's about the open letter different companies have signed saying, oh, we need to do a 6-month pause on AI development.
All the companies that don't have good AI technology.
Yeah,
somebody's behind.
Yeah, but there's quite a few somebody's behind. Just take a look at the open letter.
Well, I think Elon is a funny guy to be the face of that, given that he was sort of kicked out of OpenAI, right? Or kicked himself out of OpenAI.
You know, my feeling is the reason he is the face of this is because he's a big name in the tech news cycle right now. Otherwise, it would be like, well, Tim Cook and all these other people, or Steve Wozniak and all these other people. But yeah,
and he's also recognizable to the muggle as well. So if the news is when it's sent by your average man in the street, they'll go, oh yeah, I know MBAs, whatever, you know. So yeah,
but guys like Elon Musk and Andrew Yang, them signing a letter doesn't do a whole lot for me.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you on the whole Gartner hype cycle. Yeah. And it's fascinating to watch this because you're right, it occurs all the time. And right now just happens to be occurring with the whole AI thing. For me, what makes it really interesting is that there's been so much AI development over the past several years that's happening not in the public facing side. Right. And that has just been chugging along and progressing and doing what it's supposed to do, which is stuff like find relationships that humans might not catch. Or it would take an incredibly long time for them to find these relationships. Well, you let these AI tools have at the data and they start putting together all these correlations that then the people that need it can go and start testing to see if it holds up. Yeah, the whole LLM side of this, it's crazy. I mean, when we've reached a point where it's like every week I hear a different article on NPR related to AI or ChatGPT or OpenAI, we are definitely riding the hype cycle fast.
Yeah, I think part of what happens during the hype cycle is initially people mistake technology for a useful product. AI is a technology, it's not a product. And if you ask me, ChatGPT or Midjourney look more like technologies than products.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you put ChatGPT powered features in Microsoft Word to help you write, okay, which that's a product. Are. Yeah, which they are, which that might, I don't know, might take off. That might be a really fantastic thing. I'm not sure. It might transform the way people write and make them a lot more productive. But until you actually, you know, sort through all the use cases and find something that sticks and you know, you could claim the iPhone was a technology. It became a product once it got connected to real use models, which was, to be fair, pretty fast with the iPhone or smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm keeping an eye on the applications because you're right, Jeff. You know, companies I worked at, machine learning and then evolving into AI has been used for a long, long time. And inside the products, we never called it that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we'd have long meetings with customers, we would explain that this engine was transformed to be driven by machine learning instead of traditional mathematical algorithms. But the customer, you know, they kind of cared, but they mostly just cared about the results of the product.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Even though they might care a little bit about you dropping what to them is a buzz phrase, machine learning, didn't matter. All they knew is that you said a word that they expected to hear and they got the result that they were expecting to see.
Right. Right. My most favorite example of this kind of thing was many years ago, 30 years ago, I used to go to Japan a lot and I was walking through a store and they had the appliance section, and in English on the advertisement next to the washing machines, it said with fuzzy logic.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Remember fuzzy logic.
Remember fuzzy logic.
And so I got to the office and I asked this person, why are appliance makers advertising fuzzy logic? And this woman at our office said, well, because they're better. Those machines are better. I said, how does fuzzy logic make your washing machine better? Well, it knows how to clean the clothes better. They had no idea. And I don't know how they implemented fuzzy logic features in washing machines, but I'm sure it had something to do with analyzing the load that you put in and the temperature you set, mm-hmm. and sort of optimize the wash and rinse cycle and spin cycle. You know, today
they talk about that sort of stuff these days in a way of making sure it's ecologically friendly. You know, it will use your washing machine will use as much water as it needs and will still get your clothes clean. And so that's all just using those intelligence it's gathered from that.
But Ian, it's fuzzy logic, so it's better.
Right. Oh, it must be. Yeah, it cleans your clothes better.
That's right.
Oh, I seem to remember there was a car thing. I'm sure some car manufacturers talk about fuzzy logic for why the automatic box would learn how you drove and so then
shift.
How you shift. So when you're driving an auto, it would know that most of the time you're on a light throttle. You know, you're not going to want too much. And if you then sort of give it product acceleration, it know to kick down. So it's the same idea there.
Yeah, I guess in a sense, the ideas behind fuzzy logic are not different than machine learning or AI. It's not deterministic. But yeah, it's marketing, but it's just really a change in the way algorithms are implemented, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fuzzy logic. I've forgotten all about that. I remember when that was a hype cycle, but that one I think was more marketing because it got to the top and then dropped off.
Just fell off.
And it just kept going.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear anything about that anymore.
No, you don't.
In fact, after a couple of years, you didn't hear anything about it.
Right. Yeah, that was a very short-lived marketing fad.
Yes. What is your time scale thing with the Microsoft phone? What is that called, Jeff? What was that product that lasted 3 weeks?
Kins.
Zoom?
Kins, yeah.
Oh, so yes.
It was only a few kins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, using the kin as a time measurement for failed products, it really holds up.
Yes, it does.
I'd forgotten about that.
See? Proof that it holds up. Yeah. All right, Ben, tell us about your story. And I'm surprised I didn't know about this until I clicked on the link.
Well, it just literally released, came out this morning.
Oh, that's why I didn't know about it. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Let me tell you about a tale of David and Goliath, mm-hmm. where David ends up becoming so gigantic, he actually purchases the assets of Goliath. Okay, about a decade ago, a small Swedish startup called Zound Industries went to British amp giant Marshall Amplification and made a proposal to make Bluetooth and now Wi-Fi smart speakers that use the Marshall IP in design and also work with Marshall itself and its sound engineers,
mm-hmm.
to make sure the music coming out of this sounds as the artists intend.
Seems like a great idea.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently it was a great idea. Because Zound Industries became something like 10 times larger than Marshall. They bought the shoe and apparel maker, Adidas.
Also known as Adidas.
Adidas. Again, another, because that's the man who invented, that's the man who owns the company, a guy called Adidas. So Adidas.
Yep.
And German, they also, your aluminium Adidas trainers.
Yep. And Zound also owns a couple other brands in the lifestyle music.
That's a weird combination.
Yeah, yeah. Marshall, Urban Ears, and Adidas.
Yeah, Urban Ears. Well, as of today, Zound Industries has bought Marshall Amplification. Oof. And is renaming itself the Marshall Group. It will include not only Marshall, but their subsidiaries, Natal Drums, the Marshall Records Divisions, and the Marshall Live Agency, which actually does a lot of sponsoring tours.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall actually, between their Milton Keynes, Keynes, headquarters in England, and their Vietnamese factory for some of the more affordable items, Marshall had almost 600 employees, while Zounds had 200 in Sweden.
Wow.
As part of this, the new entity will be owned approximately a quarter by the heirs of the late great Jim Marshall,
mm-hmm.
with Zounds owning stakeholders owning the other, 76%. I mean, this was something I never thought would happen, because Marshall is literally the voice of rock and roll.
All right.
Right.
Absolutely. They're responsible for a great deal of my hearing loss, having gone to multiple Who concerts in the 70s.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I haven't used Marshall myself. I use another British amp company, Black Star.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Black Star's really good. My lad's got a Black Star. He really likes it.
Yeah, but it's... I mean, there are some interesting things to think of here. Of the new... When it comes to the new Marshall, their sound products are a significantly more important business than their instrument amplifiers.
Are there Bluetooth speakers any good?
Oh, yeah. Let me put it this way. They're good enough where they got enough money to buy Marshall.
Right. Okay, yeah, I guess that's a fair point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Because I've seen, I was walking through a Best Buy the other day and I saw it, and the name, of course, Marshall, caught my eye.
Yeah. And I mean, it obviously simplifies things for the now former Zounds, because they now own that IP. I mean, they don't have to work with another company. They don't have to get through red tape to access those engineers.
And they don't have to pay for the royalties for the, using the branding either.
Yep. So there's two possibilities here. Number one, the amplifiers are deprioritized, and they are doing this basically to get the IP and not have to use that royalties and the sound engineers. Or here's another option. For those who aren't familiar with current guitar and bass technology, the industry has been currently moving away from the large tube/valve amplifiers to solid state and floor units, which are much smaller and much more portable for touring musicians. Marshall has been a little bit behind on this.
Mm.
Especially when it comes to Black Star, Orange, Laney, and other British amplifier companies. The full range speakers in these amplifiers could help Marshall with new solid state products, they are, given that Zounds is now a much larger company, this potentially allows for a significant capital improvement or capital influx into Marshall Amplification that it could not have as the ironically small family-owned company it has always been. So you could see a lot of these products that ironically have tried to mimic Marshall in their sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Blackstar and Laney came up with what are called pedal board amps, which use a Class D or Class AB amplifier, solid state, and essentially a preamp design, which is designed to mimic tubes.
Mm. That's interesting.
I mean, this could be what literally saves Marshall.
It might also save Zounds, given that they still have a lot of Kanye West inventory at Adidas to get rid of. Maybe this revenue from Marshall can fill that hole for him. Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised that the musician amplifiers used for live venues isn't solid state everywhere. I understand why you wouldn't. I'm sure the sound of the older technology
sound though, aren't they? Valve is a much warmer sound, because I know my lad is looking at getting a valve amp because he wants that warmer sound for his.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, here's the thing with it. We guitarists are a very fickle bunch.
No.
Yeah. yep. That's why I have 5 guitars sitting right next to me, because each one of those sounds completely different. It is why I have gone through Lord knows how many overdrive pedals to find the one that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with amplifiers, we're particular. Very, very particular. Well, here's the thing on that. With modern cloning technology, frequency responses and impulse responses of speakers have gotten so good where you can mimic the sound response of some of those amps. And that's why people have been starting to go away from those big old Marshall heads to something that will not break the bank and will not weigh 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And break your back.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how Marshall does in sort of the consumer market for Bluetooth speakers. There seems to be a lot of churn in that business. How big of a business is the amplifier business for musicians? That's got to be pretty big, right?
You would think, but we're also a very insular group, of which there's a lot of companies in this space right now. I mean, the same kind of digital technology in full frame has led to a lot of cheaper Chinese companies entering the market and producing fantastic equipment.
Yeah, I it seems to be on the consumer side, a lot of people are satisfied with less than high quality Bluetooth speakers. You know, it's more about money. You know, they'll spend some money, but they're not going to spend $400 on a Sonos speaker. They'll spend $100 on a speaker, maybe.
Yeah, and I think that's why the Zound Marshall series has been so successful. You know, they don't have access to those those music engineers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
it's
interesting looking at how, well, okay, Ben, the way you presented this in the beginning, where David got so big he just bought out Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happened here. And yeah. And as you've been talking through this, I'm now with you. I think that Zound Industries may actually end up being the company that saves Marshall, even though going into this discussion, I wasn't seeing Marshall as a company that that was at risk. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. This is kind of like Kensington going and buying HP.
Yeah. That's a good analogy, that, yes.
Yeah.
Well, given HP's performance over the last few years, that might not be that crazy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, HP and Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, maybe now we'll have more people that are going to experience better sound.
And more hearing loss.
And more hearing loss. Yeah.
I'm sorry, what'd you say, Ben?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it is about better sound. Just like TSO Host sounds really good. And what makes them sound so good to us is that they're really good at what they do. And they're helping us be here live on the internet every single week. TSO Host, they're not an audio company. They are like an internet company. They help you buy domain names. They do web hosting, and they're leveraging what they do so that we can be here every single week. They are giving us what we need, the bandwidth that we need, so we can live stream shows to you every single week. And they're giving us the hosting space we need so that we have a place for the website to live. And they are giving us that storage space we need so that all of the recordings for the shows have a place to live, so you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes whenever you want. Without their generous support, we would not be here. The resources it takes to do what we're doing, it would be prohibitive for us. We simply would not be able to do this. So we really appreciate that they are here helping us. What they're asking in return, so simple. Just go online on your favorite social media platform and thank them for being here supporting the British Tech Network. That's all they're asking. It's simple, it's fast, and it's good karma. So please go do that. Now, if you need to buy domain names or you want some web hosting, hit them up for that, because we prove every single week how solid and reliable they are, because our website doesn't go down. Our live streams just work. It all just works. So go load up your cart with the domain names you want to buy, get your hosting package, all of that. Then add in the discount code BTN20 and you get 20% off that order. Incredibly generous. So thank you, TSO Hosts, for being here and supporting us. And this is where I would typically say, Patrice, can you please tell us about the live chat? But she's unable to join us today. So here's the part where we get to watch me completely fumble through something that she makes look so, so easy. And all right, so here's the deal. We have a live chat going on during all of our shows as they're happening live. And you can join in. And you can do that by going to chat.britishtechnetwork.com, I believe. chat.britishtechnetwork.com. I will say it with authority, which will make it real. And from there, you can hop into the live chat and interact with us as we're recording the show. All right. If you're watching or listening after the fact, that means that, as Patrice rightly points out every single week, you can't join the live chat because we are stuck in a linear timeline. But what you can do is go and see what happened during the chat, which will include all of the links to articles we discuss, all of the cool things that we're about to discuss, any interaction that we're having with people who are participating live, all of that's there. You can find that by, okay, so here's the thing. When you go to do it live, chat's at the beginning. So it's chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And I just realized this. When you go after the fact, chat's at the end. That actually kind of makes sense. So it's britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Am I right? I think.
Yes. Yes.
Patrice is going to be so proud.
Patrice will definitely be proud.
Yeah. And there you can find this awesome calendar that I presume Patrice designed. If she didn't, whatever. Go and check out the amazing calendar that Patrice designed. She gets credit for it regardless. Find the day for the episode where you want to see the live chat. For example, today is March 30th. And so you could go and pick March 30th on the calendar, and then you'll see the link for the chat, and you'll just see the chat. I don't know. You'll end up finding the chat when you click on the date. And so you can see all the links and stuff there. And this, people, is why when Patrice is here, after I finish talking about TSO hosts, I come up with something clever like, Patrice, would you mind telling people where they can find the live chat? And then off she goes and makes it look so simple, and there's no stress like I just experienced, and it's an awesome thing. So, Patrice, that's my long-winded way of saying I really appreciate that you do the chat part for me when you were here. All right. So with that, I think we actually successfully managed to get through explaining the whole chat thing to people, which now means it's time for cool things. And who has the first cool thing? And Tom is hitting us up with
crickets, crickets, crickets.
Okay, my cool thing today is a pretty quick one. There's a new, I think it's two or three episode series about the Malaysia Flight 370.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, that happened 9 years ago now, 2014, I think. And to me, obviously, it's a terrible story of, you know, the 200, almost 250 people who died. But the circumstances and the fact that they've never found the airplane, they may have found pieces of it, as we remember, that washed up and on the shores of Eastern Africa. Mm-hmm. But it just perplexes me that they can't figure this thing out. And, you know, over time, you get dribbles and drabs about all the different things they've learned and, you know, what theories are crap and what theories, you know, they're following. So, spoiler alert, they haven't found the plane. Spoiler alert, they didn't figure out what the cause of the crash was or where the plane is. But what I liked about this series was it was pretty short. And it basically was a good summary of the facts of what happened, what they know and they didn't know, what theories people have proposed, and what is sort of robust about the theories and where the theories have holes. And as they do that, you kind of get some of the tin hat conspiracy theory stuff mixed in. But I think they do a pretty good job of having people on both sides that say, yeah, that's a great theory, but this is why it's hard to believe because of these four reasons. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was interesting to see that all in one place and get all the information about the radars and who had radar and who didn't. And did the Americans have AWACS there or not? And what about the in Inmarsat data? What does that really mean? And are the plane pieces that they found in Africa, you know, are they really part of that plane or is there some doubt about it? It was a good summary of that. So if you have an interest in that kind of thing, I would recommend investing a couple hours in this series.
Awesome. I've seen some documentaries about this before. And so, of course, I'm going to watch this now because I'm curious because this is when did this come out? Oh, this came out in 2014.
No, oh. this is brand new. The series is brand new.
Oh, I misread. It said release year, and then it says in 2014. It doesn't have the release year listed. Yeah.
It just last week or two it came out.
Okay. So this will have interesting bits that I haven't seen in the other. It's like you watch a documentary series where each episode they go into some other thing, and one episode will be about this plane crash.
Right.
And each one that I see when it's later than or more recent than the one before, there's always a new piece of information.
Yeah, I think in this one, it was interesting, for example, to hear them interview the guy from Inmarsat and explain how they arrived at their conclusion that the plane probably went in the direction of the southern Indian Ocean. And then hear people challenge that and hear their response. It was just good to have all that in one place. It doesn't come to any conclusion or have any bias towards one theory or another. But I think they presented them pretty well. And actually, they have some of the family members of people who died who were big, very active in trying to figure out what happened. It was interesting to see them interviewed.
Cool. All right. And it's on Netflix. So
yes,
there you go. Cool. All right, Ian, you are up next.
I am up next. I'm recommending the DC app called DC Infinite over on iPhone and Android. If you install it, you can get access to a whole wealth of comics from DC. It's a really great app in terms of being able to read DC comics. I enjoy it, to be honest. I beat it up and I pay the, I think it's £7.99 UK pounds to have access. And then you get a good wide range and it helps me catch up with some of the stuff I've missed. So that's one thing. I'm also going to throw another one in there as I'm constantly listening to stuff on Audible. I've just started listening to an old Neil Gaiman book I've not listened to for some time, which is Neverwhere. I remember reading it. And it's really good. And it's read by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, nice.
So it's really good. And it follows some of his usual tropes, to be fair, in terms of some of the way you can see parallels with that in Stardust. There's another one of his books. But it's great fun. It's great fun. Really well read and really interesting. So if you're looking for a pick for Audible,
do a little bit more
I can highly
before.
Recommend
I imagine
Natalie's
going to do a little more research on it before we actually
dive into
doing
it's
it.
Put banana on.
That was weird.
That was weird.
Neil Gaiman actually narrated it, the book himself?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's narrated by Neil Gaiman. I will find out. He does quite a good narration as well. He's quite a good storyteller in his own right.
I have heard him narrate stuff before. And he's just a natural. He's really good.
Good Omens is the one that everyone really knows because of TV shows and everything else. But on Sandman, obviously.
Oh, right. Yep. Now people know
Sandman. Lots of Sandman, Neverwhere. Mm-hmm. He's recently written a good book about Norse mythology. Apparently that's worth a look at too.
The Magicians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And children's books, Coraline. Very good.
Yeah,
Stardust
is
very good.
He does.
Yeah, you can usually generally guarantee that if it's got Neil Gaiman involved in it, it will be pretty good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I thought I'd throw that one in as well.
Awesome. Speaking of throwing, Ben, that brings us to your cool thing. Look, bonus transition.
Yes. And talk about bonuses. So I am a customer of this little company called T-Mobile. I think people all over the world might have heard of it.
Yeah. Over here it's called EE, but same thing.
Deutsche Telekom,
Deutsche Telekom as well, yeah.
Well, for us here in the United States this week, as part of a free perk, they are giving away a free season of MLB.tv. You can watch every single Major League Baseball game except for the ones you really want to watch because of blackouts.
But you're getting what you pay for, right?
Yeah. But I mean, this costs, if you were to buy a season of this, it is $150. They also gave you a free season of MLS. So, I mean, the service is really good too, but there's neither high nor there that actually being able to make a phone call.
Yeah.
But I have to say, T-Mobile has been more than worth it.
Ben, I was a T-Mobile customer before the iPhone came out, and I switched to AT&T because at the time that's the only place you could get an iPhone.
Yeah, well, back then T-Mobile sucked.
It was kind of rough. Yeah. And actually I had been a customer so long, I still had a VoiceStream sim because T-Mobile bought VoiceStream.
Also, yeah. I mean, here in the UK, they do a similar thing. BT Sport via EE is the same deal. So if you're a UK listener and you're looking for something similar, and you're an ET, yes. And you're an EE, don't forget there's BT Sport through that. You're stuck to watching it on one device, I think, for the benefits of your contract. But you can pay a fairly small amount a month to get it by on any device. So if you want Premiership football and things like that, then BT Sports are worthwhile to have a look at.
I used to I use the MLB app a lot. I used to subscribe to their audio package.
Yep.
Because in the old days, or in many places, you can't stream a baseball broadcast. You can't, if a radio station is a broadcaster for Major League Baseball, when they're doing the baseball game, they stop the stream because of the broadcast rights problem. But yeah. So I subscribe to audio for that reason. If I'm away from the house or away from a real radio, I could listen to the games. But I found recently, I don't think the radio stations are as diligent about turning off their stream during games anymore. And I'm wondering if there are changes in the broadcast rights. If you're a radio station and you pay money to a team to broadcast their games, why do they care if I'm listening over the air or streaming? I still get the same ads. Everything is the same.
Well, it kind of depends on who you have and what team you have and what contracts they have.
Right.
Like my Cubs not too long ago switched over from their decades-long contract with WGN Radio and moved over to 670 The Score, which 670 broadcasts Cubs baseball through the Audacity app.
Right.
So as soon as this is over, I know what I'm doing.
You're getting some Audacity action going on.
Yeah, I think you know, you can do the same thing with TuneIn Premium. You can get some sports in there if you pay for the premium. Yeah. But, you know, part of the frustration for me is you do something like sign up with TuneIn Premium this year, and then next year all the rights have changed and they no longer have the rights. You know, it changes so often with the streaming stuff that I just gave up and said, forget it, I'm not paying for anything. I can't figure out where it's going to be from year to year or what the blackouts are going to be.
Yeah, it is frustrating, and I don't even follow sports, you know, as everyone knows, and yet just the whole thing with blackouts and it's so complicated just to try and figure out how someone wants to watch a show.
Right.
It's stupid. Yeah. Cool. All right. So T-Mobile deal. All right. So my pick, and as I'm picking it, I'm thinking I might have picked this, when the season started. But holy crap, it's so good that might as well pick it again. Star Wars, The Bad Batch, season 2 wrapped up, yesterday. And holy forking shirtballs, people. when the Bad Batch was being promoted, before the series even launched, they were talking about how they wanted to make sure that this was a show that would fit for kids, and mm-hmm. so they introduced a child as one of the main characters, and it follows what happens with a group of clone troopers immediately following Order 66, which saw the eradication of the Jedi and the fall of the Galactic Republic and the rise of the Empire. And in season two, it continues on with the storyline from season one, introduces some new characters. There's a couple episodes where I saw people complaining, saying that was just like a cutesy episode and it didn't really fit. And I'm like, people, they kept telling us that children were being targeted with this series. So you got to keep that in mind. And then it was like they completely forgot that they were making a show that they wanted to have children interested in some way. And it went completely adult and completely dark for the rest of the season. Yeah. Holy crap. And when I watched they released the last two episodes at the same time. Oh, thank the Lord's a cool ball for that, because the cliffhanger ending of the first half of that was just, it was like, as the credits were rolling, I'm actually yelling at my television, are you fracking kidding me? You're going to make me wait till next week to see what happens. And then all of a sudden the screen flips and gives me the countdown to the next episode. And I realized,
thank God,
I'm staying up late tonight. and then that episode ends and I'm yelling at my TV saying, are you fracking kidding me? You're going to make me wait for a new season. This is such a well done show.
Yeah.
Yes, it's animated. And I know that turns off some people from thinking it's a legit series. This is such a well done series, and the twists and turns that they have taken in season two.
Yeah. And I mean, you would think that it was just cut and dry between the end of Order 66 and the rise of the Empire, the rise of the Stormtrooper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're finding the transition there was a lot more interesting than you would think.
Interesting and messy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a well-done series. So I am already desperately waiting for the next season. Yeah. Anyhow, so The Bad Batch, it's on Disney Plus, and it is really good.
Is Star Wars the main reason why you have Disney Plus?
Yes.
Or is there other stuff?
Yes.
Is there other stuff that you like on there?
I like watching some of the National Geographic documentary series. And they have the Marvel stuff. So,
oh, okay.
Yep.
I watch that too.
And they have the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, right. They have the Mighty Ducks. Yep. I heard there's some controversy with that series.
Oh, there's always controversy.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
But... But what I really liked about this season of The Bad Batch, since Dave Filoni's hat literally is in all these pies now with Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
you're seeing stuff in The Bad Batch that's going to pay off in other series.
Right.
Yes. In fact, literally right now you have a storyline that starts in the Bad Batch, goes to the Mandalorian, and then finishes up in Rise of Skywalker.
Right. Yep. Mm. I noticed that too. Yep. And I won't give any spoilers because everyone knows I am hardcore anti-spoiler. So what I will say instead is that if you are following or have been following all the different series in the Star Wars universe on Disney, there are a couple special treats waiting for you in this week's episode of The Mandalorian.
Yes. This is the way.
This is the way.
Also, cool. I can't wait. I don't know when they're going to do this, but I can't wait to see them introduce the Imperial class Star Destroyer and the TIE Fighter.
Right, because those don't exist yet in the Bad Batch.
Yep.
They're still using the Galactic Republic's equipment because they haven't had time to start really doing their own thing yet. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So I could go on all day, but I know that Ben really, really wants to work around his baseball blackout. So we need to make that happen. And that means that what I should do right now is say, Tom, where can people find you?
You can find me in the BTN Slack and also on Mastodon. I am TomF@sfba.social.
Awesome. And I'm glad you're back.
Thank you.
All right. So, Ben, I'm assuming we can just find you hanging out at it's
Wrigley Field, Clark and Addison.
Yep. So when you're not hanging out at Wrigley, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on social media at Ben Rathick on your social media of choice. You can find me at rathicktech.blogspot.com for my interim permanent website. I just released new content. Was it today or yesterday? Well, one of these days, they all blend together.
They all do. Yeah.
You can also find me on days that Dave is not on vacation on In Touch with iOS. Mm-hmm. You can find me somehow bribing Chuck to get on Mac Voices. And you can definitely find me tomorrow on the Mac Show early at 10 a.m.
Early at
Central Standard Central Daylight Time.
Yeah. I live in the Gen X of time zones, Mountain Time. It's the time zone everyone forgets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me in the Slack room here every Thursday on The Big Show. And otherwise, I'm on LinkedIn, Ian Brown. Look for me there, Veeam Software.
Awesome. All right. So where can people find me? Jay Gamut on pretty much all the socials, the two that I'm doing stuff on right now, Mastodon and Instagram. And then for shows, most Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, here on Thursdays with all of you on The Big Show, most Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS with Ben as well. And then back here on Fridays for the Mac Show. And then Brand Chaffin and I do the Context Machine as well. And then occasionally other shows. Oh, like I was just recently on for Mac Guys Only, Mike Potter's show. And that was a lot of fun. We talked, we did some Apple tips and tricks, answered some listener questions, and talked about Mac Stock, which is coming up in the middle of July, and I will be there speaking. So come to Mac Stock so we can all hang out together. All right. So that brings us to the end of the show, which means that I really, really need to tell you how much I appreciate all of you being here, because it's true. I have so much fun hanging out with all of you. every single week. It is a treat. And then all of you that watch or listen live, regardless of whether or not you are participating in the live chat, I am so glad you were here too, because it's just awesome to get to hang out with all of you. Every one of you that watches, listens later, I'm so glad you're part of the BTN family too. It's great. We just have this awesome, wonderful international family. And it's just a pleasure to get to be a part of this. Hey, thank you, TSO hosts, for supporting us. Mueller, please get on the mend, all right? Because we need to see you around every now and then so that, you know, so we can take the piss with you.
Because he's still in hospital, poor guy.
It's
young, or is he in hospital?
I'm not even sure right now. But regardless, get better.
Yeah, look after yourself, Steve. Take care, mate.
Yeah. Hey, Ewan, thank you just for being you. And Patrice, sorry you couldn't join us today. Looking forward to you being back here next week. And I think that's it. I think we made it to the end of the show. And somehow managed to find rails a couple times. I think we were just crossing the tracks. yeah. So everyone, don't forget to join us tomorrow for the Mac show. I believe Patrice will be back with us for that. And then next Thursday again for the big show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.